Good news, great news, amazing news. The beauty brand's annual leader sale is here. Protect that gorgeous do of yours with professional salon products. Save up to 74% on over 180 top brands like Biolage, Redken, Hemp, Paul Mitchell, and more. Pamper your mane and pamper it good. I'm excited. You're excited. We're all excited. It's leader sale.
Beauty brand's annual leader sale. All your favorite salon professional shampoos and conditioners starting at just $13.99. Get to your nearest store or visit beautybrands.com.
Edition of the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alveda, but, you know, sometimes he goes around traveling, saying that it's all for the good of the show, but he's having a good time anyway. But hey, it was the U.S. Open this past week, so we always have major reinforcements. So who better than the European golf guru, Kieran Clark, who's with me one more time. Kieran, welcome again to the show. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Carlos. Yes, I'm pleased to be the cavalry coming in to save the day in Fred's absence. Obviously, he's off enjoying himself, which he's perfectly entitled to do. Fred loves his life in golf and likes him around playing different courses, but obviously we have the opportunity now without him talk about the U.S. Open. Obviously, a big win for Brooks Koepka at the weekend there, Aaron Hills, a great performance from him. He's finally made a major break for a guy who's kind of looked at for a number of years and has been a potential major winner. Has the talent now, still that potential, and become a major champion, winning his national championship. Obviously, a great achievement for him. And a championship that we'll probably talk about in different ways at the golf course, and who played well, who didn't play well. There were certainly a lot of talking points coming from it, but there was no question, Carlos, that Brooks Koepka was fantastic and thoroughly deserved to win.
He was definitely head above the rest all weekend. I mean, he only had one average round, but hey, we have a lot more to talk about. There was also more action on the LPGA, the Web.com Tour, the Challenge Tour. There was PGA Latin America. We have everything for you. Plus, we have the previews for this weekend's action. But, hey, Kieran, you know that Fred, you know how he is. He could not just stay away. So he recorded a piece to, you know, give us his opinion on the U.S. Open. So we'll get that.
Get rid of him, Carlos. He's always, even when he's not here, he's got to still be involved somehow. You just can't let it be.
Yeah.
Give us a week away, Fred. Go away, enjoy your week away. Don't, you know, we can do it without you. We're fine. We can cope.
Yeah, he cannot sacrifice like he says he's doing just for the good of the show and stay away. No, he had to record a piece, so we're going to be listening a little bit about him and his opinions and what happened there. Of course, we have the par 5 news, we have the practice range. We're going to give a quick early preview about the Open. It's going to be in Royal Birkdale, but also we're going to be talking about the PGA Tour is going to start drug testing in October. That's major news. I mean, to me, that's major, but anyway, here, let's get to it. I am really upset. This thing about reverse psychology, I don't think it's working fine with my picks. I mean, in the Masters, of course, I didn't pick for the first time ever Sergio Garcia. And what happened? He won, right? So I picked, and among my picks were Hideki Matsuyama to win, of course, right? Brooks Koepka, I mentioned, yeah, this is one of the guys to look. And when you're not around, I am like trying to fill in your big shoes on the European Tour. So I follow a lot there, and I do the reporting. And Tommy Fleetwood is a guy that I called in. And I said, you know, he looks to me like he could be the Danny Willett this year. Now, the U.S. Open, I said, no, I'm not going to even pick one of all three. What happens? Win, second, and T4. That's what happens when I don't pick those guys. It's incredible. But Brooks Koepka, like you said, he won his first major when he shot a wonderful, wonderful final round there of 67 to win the U.S. Open, and it was by 4 shots. He had gone into that final round just 1 shot off the lead that was held by Brian Herman. For long periods of that round, they were locked up together at the top of the leaderboard. But however, Koepka, who played in the American Ryder Cup team last year, birdied at 14, 15, and 16 to really grab there the initiative. and he was starting to stretch away from his nearest competitors. He had played the final four holes at 3 under par. That should tell you he was not going to lose that with 4-shot lead. So Harman's round of 74, he meant it was finished, tied for second, and the left-hander should be proud of the way he played in those tricky conditions all week. I mean, alongside Harman at 12 under par was, my guy, Hideki Matsuyama, the Japanese player having the best final round with a 66, which gave him a sniff of winning the title before Koepka went put a birdie blitz there at the end. Tommy Fleetwood, which I just mentioned, the Englishman, he started the final round level with Koepka, but he couldn't find the same consistency he had found in the previous three rounds, and his round of 72 meant he finished fourth. Both Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas were well fancied to win before the start of this final round, but both players struggled to score as well as they had done earlier in the week. In fact, you might remember Thomas, who had shot a wonderful 63 on the Saturday, never recorded from 3 bogeys in the opening 5 holes, while Fowler made too many mental errors. I mean, he keeps doing this, and he did well to finish level par for the round, but he looked worse than what was there. At the end, Koepka's scores of 16 under par equaled the record U.S. Open 72-hole score set by Rory McIlroy back in 2011. Darren Hill's course was much more playable than the usual U.S. Open courses, but whether the USGA stick with this sort of setup remains to be seen. I am willing to say, after all the glitches and all the things and the controversies that the USGA had gone through, they really opened it up and allowed the players to play a little bit. The US Open tweeted about how Koepka conquered golf's ultimate test. I mean, his success was built from accuracy of the tee and when approaching the greens. He hit 88% of fairways and 62 out of 72 greens in regulations. It showed staying out of the deep rough was the way forward, as his putting stats were actually a little worse than the average in the field. So, Kieran, this, I tell you, the U.S. Open definitely just win his 7th pro title and moves him now up to 10th in the world rankings. Hideki, man, he continues that stealth ascent in the world golf rankings. He leapfrogged Rory McIlroy and Jason Day from 4th to 2nd in the world. I mean, he's not threatening DJ for a long while. He's 4 percentage points behind, but hopefully, I don't know, because nobody keeps talking about him, but hopefully now he will be talked in the same sentences as the former top three. And Kieran, of course, Sergio, hey, he's back up to 5.
He certainly is. And you mentioned Brooks Koepka, who, of course, won the U.S. Open there. And actually, 2 years ago, when Brooks had won the Phoenix Open for his first PGA Tour title, he said his ambition was to become the world's number one player. Now, he's obviously not there yet, but you'll certainly feel a lot closer to that after winning his first major. And actually, one thing about Koepka, a guy who also has immense talent, he's kind of the archetypal modern professional golfer. He's so powerful off the tee, the athletic, he has this kind of demeanor that's very calm and composed on the outside, but really masks that inner confidence and real self-belief that he has. He had the kind of an assured, kind of lazily controlled gait, a little bit like Clint Eastwood and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, just kind of very solid, a nice walk to him, very commanding walk. And he looked so assured when he came out. And suddenly he was the one guy who really took control of the day, started brilliantly, and that was it. He never looked back. No one else really made a run at him. Obviously, Matsuyama posted that score. And at that point, I sort of thought, oh, that could be a playoff number 12 under. But then, almost simultaneously, Koepka reels off 3 birdies and ends the championship right there. And he was so cool under pressure. He was so commanding off the tee. His ball striking was just superb all week. And it had to be in that last day when the winds were a little bit higher. He had the control structure, he controlled the ball on the flight, and he did that so well. And again, it was really impressive. Again, the one thing that kept it for me is surprising. A guy taking off a unique route in the game, starting mostly his professional career in Europe, playing on the Challenge Tour, winning there 4 times, winning in Scotland indeed 4 years ago up in Abbey Moor in the Highlands, and onto the European Tour, one in Turkey, then back over to America, one in Phoenix. But since then, you know, almost 2.5 years ago, he hadn't won before this weekend, and that was a surprise. And he actually said himself that he felt like an underachiever, that he hadn't converted opportunities, he hadn't won enough events that he felt he should have done. And, but of course, winning a US Open card will put a lot of that to right. You know, he went out of field so much better about his career and where he stands right now. And at 27, he has a great future in the game, certainly, and a great younger American star for American golf fans to look at. And obviously, you know, Justin Thomas made the headlines on Saturday with that great round, but Brooks Koepka walked away with a trophy, and that was the most important thing. And he's a guy, right now, you mentioned the top players, Dustin and Rory and Jason, all missing the cuts. So once the window is open to you this summer, who can replace those guys as being the dominant figure this season, coming up to the Open Championship and the PGA Championship? Well, you know, Matsuyama's there and so on, but right now, Brooks Koepka, he could be the guy to really emerge this summer and become the top player at the end of August.
Most certainly. I remember, I mean, he can really smash the ball. He, even though he looked, because he was in the spotlight on Sunday, so everybody was like bursting about his driving distance, but he was seventh overall, and of course 22.1 yards is enough, right? But he still has some problems with his putter. I mean, he was good enough to win here in the U.S. Open, but definitely he has arrived. I remember last year when he was playing in the Ryder Cup, and he was there with against Rory McIlroy and Thomas Peters and DJ, and it was like bumper's paradise. And he certainly has arrived. He has the style to win. He was, like you say, we have been following him since he was playing during the Challenge Tour. He did his dues there. I mean, he has the complete tools. I still think he needs to get some better putting before we can start to say, hey, he's up there with the top five in the world, but he's certainly on his way. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the one thing that perhaps has held him back in the last few years, where he's contended a lot in events. He's come close to winning events, but he hasn't quite been able to cross the line, and that could have been down to the putting. But I think in the end of the US Open, which tends to be more of a ball striker's paradise, you have his ball striking, his driving, his iron play is so superb. He had so many greens in regulation, had so many fairways, and also a distance as well. I think that he was just so good at that, and he was so consistent, didn't make any mistakes. He could actually overcome the fact that his putting was perhaps below average, where other guys were making more mistakes, and even though they were sort of scrambling around and hanging in there, you know, Koepka just looked so in control right from the start. But yeah, I think you're right about the putting. He has to sort of improve on that to maybe become a dominant player in the game. But again, look at Dustin Johnson, who he's very close to. They both sort of work with the same coaches, part of the Harmon stable. He's coached by Claude Harmon. Well, of course, Dustin's coached by Dutch Harmon primarily. And you know, they're part of the same stable. They're good friends. And Dustin was very much like Brooks years ago, where he was very powerful off the tee. He obviously had all the potential, but didn't quite fulfill that. He didn't quite cross the line and win. Obviously, in the last year or two, Dustin has really come to strength. He's won his first major, become world number one, and improved his putting, improved his game from 100 yards and in. And I think Brooks is now in a stage where his career, where to become the complete golfer, he has to improve his game from 100 yards and in. He has a great long game. Can he combine that with a great short game? And if he does that, there's no reason why he can't try and emulate Dustin Johnson and become world number one in the next few years.
Totally agree. I think now it's time to bring in Fred and his recorded piece and see what he has to say. And after that, we'll just close up with a couple of opinions based on what he says. So let's hear Fred Alvader and his take on the U.S. Open.
Hey, guys. Even though I can't be there with you tonight, you know I just have to say some things about the U.S. Open that wrapped up last weekend at Erin Hills. First, a little about the players. The top three players in the world, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, and Jason Day, all missed the cut at Erin Hills. In fact, eight of the top 12 players missed the cut last weekend. Jordan Spieth finished 24th with scores of 73, 71, 76, and 69 for a total of 3 under par and 13 shots behind the winner, Brooks Koepka. One of the hottest golfers of the year, John Rahm, also missed the cut at Erin Hills and was forced to watch Koepka's win from his couch. Brooks Koepka was in a different world on Sunday. When you hear athletes talk about being in the zone, that was it. He was in his own world, playing his game and not being distracted by anyone or anything. A three-putt bogey at number 10 was the only blemish on his card to go with six birdies. I did not think Koepka was quite ready to win a major, but he is definitely one of the guys that will move into the top contenders with Spieth, Day, Rose, Rory, and Dustin Johnson going forward. Speaking of DJ, he and Brooks have been training and practicing together for the last couple of years. They do remind me of each other, power game, athletic swagger, and mental toughness on the golf course. Brian Hammond, was tied with Koepka at the top after 54 holes. He posted an even par 72 on Sunday, but just couldn't keep up with Koepka. Justin Thomas put on a show on Saturday with a 63. What an exciting round. As we know, it's hard to follow up a low round the next day, and that axiom held true once again. Carlos, your guy, Hideki Matsuyama, was in the mix all week, and his final round 6-under par 66 left him at runner-up. He posted 12-under early, and I thought at the time that may put some pressure on the leaders that still had a couple holes yet to play. But Koepka put that thought to rest with birdies at 14, 15, and again at 16 to take control of the tournament. Tommy Fleetwood had a great week, finishing solo fourth. This should give him PGA Tour membership, and we should be seeing a lot more of him in America. He is young and a real player. For Ricky Fowler, yet another disappointment, and I think this one stung a little bit. He looked like a guy that thought this was his tournament to win all week until three bogeys, three birdies in the final round left him with an even par 72 and yet another top five finish in a major. Butch Harmon had a talk with Ricky over the winter and set down some rules about social media and off-course activities. If he wanted Butch to continue working with him and if Ricky had the drive to become a champion, will this loss be the motivator Ricky needs to get over the hump and win a major or two going forward? That's a good question. Let's talk a little bit about Aaron Hills and the low scoring. First, Aaron Hills was much softer than the USGA would have liked. Yes, there were wins, but not the kind of wins that affect scoring by 2 to 3 shots per round. The greens were fast, but not unplayable fast. Downhill putts still stayed on the greens. If they'd wanted to, the USGA could have added speed to the greens, which would have made scoring much higher. As you could see, the fairways were quite generous, and in hindsight, the USGA probably wishes they would have narrowed them a bit. When you allow these pros to have a clean line in the fairway, they can do unbelievable things with iron shots into greens from inside 200 yards. Second, this was a record-setting, low-scoring U.S. Open, and that's okay. The same USGA that catches heat every year for a golf course that's too difficult and at times unplayable should get kudos for a fair track that tested all parts of a player's game. In the end, however, it was a bomber mentality who can hit it the farthest won the day. But isn't that usually the case? Bobby Jones was the longest in his time. Sam Snead could hit it as far as he wanted. Jack Nicklaus was by far the longest of his era. Tiger was always at the top of distance off the tee. When bombers can keep it in the fairway, they win most of the time. It should also be mentioned by those that want to compare Johnny Miller's 63 with Justin Thomas's 63. Thomas's was shot on a par 72 golf course. Miller's was 8-under on a par 71. Jeff Babineaux summed it up nicely. Those who wish to point to soft conditions to question the quality of Thomas's 63, Miller's 63 was scored on a 71 course played at 6,900 yards. Thomas, obviously armed with far more modern equipment and a golf ball that travels farther, shot 63 on a par 72 that measured 900 yards longer. On Saturday, Aaron Hills played to 7,818 yards. That's a long golf course. The one problem that Aaron Hills has is that 15 through 18 played way too easy on Sunday. That will have to be addressed when a big tournament returns to Aaron Hills in the future. Bottom line, the low scoring didn't bother me. I actually thought it was a good thing. Let the guys play. Thomas's 63 and Koepka's overall domination of the course was a welcome change to guys hacking out of knee-high hay and making double bogeys. Fox broadcast continues to improve. Either Joe Buck is getting better at golf or Paul Angsier and Brad Faxon are making him look better. I think it's probably the latter. With Zinger, Fax, and Curtis Strange hogging most of the airtime, Steve Flesch didn't get in much commentary, but he was the best they had before these guys joined, and he's still very good. So that is a good thing. Ken Brown's brownie points were a nice addition. Brown, an experienced announcer from Europe, and he is also a great add for the Fox team. Fox is definitely getting better at producing a quality golf telecast, but they still are not in the same league with NBC or CBS. I give them a B plus and a much improved from the past 2 years. Although the telecast was watchable, it seems no one was watching. Saturday's numbers continued the downward spiral of network viewing. I'm sure the live streaming numbers are up, and most of my viewing was on the phone or computer. But internet streaming is not what Fox is paying $100 million for every year. I can even excuse Joe Buck's heir and Kepka's current girlfriend status. Brad Faxon made a great save, however. Plus, some of these guys change their lady friends like some guys change caddies. Bottom line, it was another U.S. Open major championship on a relative new golf course that the USGA was scared to change and make as difficult as humanly possible. USGA, aware of the problems of the past couple of U.S. Opens, felt the pressure. They did not take any chances of making waves, and in my humble opinion, that's the way it should be. The winner was determined on the course, not by a superintendent's whim or a video replay when the ball moved a dimple on a slick green. I love Aaron Hills and the U.S. Open. Congrats to Brooks Koepka. Well played, sir.
There you have it. That was Fred Alvader. And definitely I was going to correct Fred about the status of what Joe Buck said. It was some Becky Adams, of course, it's Jenna Sims, his fiancée. And wow. Now, yeah, Fox definitely is improving their coverage, but that comes with time. So far as the course, my take, I still think that the USGA just wanted to get away from any controversy, and they just let them play. And besides, I remember what Rory McIlroy said. I mean, if these guys cannot hit a fairway as wide where a jet can land, they should be sent packing. Well, of course, he was one of the ones that could be sent packing, right? But definitely, the course was very, very playable. I don't think they could have done, if they wanted it, they could have done it. They could have put it a little bit more. And you can see it. I mean, they started trimming down the hay and the side and the rough. And I don't know. It's just, I still get that they just didn't want any more controversy. And for Ricky Fowler, well, he has now played 30 majors without a win, but now has finished top five in seven. And this is the third time in 5 years he has finished top 10 at the U.S. Open. So, and also my final comment on it, for the first time since 1998 to 2000, Americans have won the U.S. Open three straight years, with Jordan Spieth, DJ last year, and Brooks Koepka now. So any final thoughts on what he said or anything about the U.S. Open, Ken?
Yeah, Carl, just about the golf course, and I'm not afraid in terms of the set. I thought the USGA set the course up perfectly, and in the end, had the course been firmer, had the wind been greater than what it was for the most part, then the scoring would have been higher, obviously. But I think set up right. But on the other hand, I would look at the type of golf course that it was, and visually it didn't feel like a US Open, I don't think. It felt very much like a PGA Championship. Think of a course like Keel Island or Whistling Straits nearby. It was more in that mold. And I think it's kind of an identity crisis with the US Open and the PGA at the moment, where of the four majors, I think each of the four majors should be distinct and unique from each other. The Masters, obviously, Augusta National every year has that great history. The Open Championships played in the British Isles, played in the Lynx course, it's unique for that reason. But the other two are a little bit different, and the US Open used to always be, it was the hardest one, it had the long rough and this and that, it was punishing, it was hard. Whether you like that or not, it was just that's what it was. Well, the PGA Championship was almost like an amped-up version of a tour event. But this year it felt to me that the US Open was like a PGA Championship light, and there's no difference between two of them. So in the coming years, when we go back to more traditional venues now, you know, Shinnecock next year, Winsett coming up, Pebble Beach, the next sort of 9-10 years, the USGA is going back to old-fashioned venues, Brookline, Pinehurst, courses with great history, and to me that's what the US Open is all about. Not necessarily setting them up, you know, with the narrow fairways and the fast greens and whatnot, but I think, for me, the US Open should be about the classic courses, the old history of the game in America. Let the PGA Championship go to venues like Aaron Hills, the new, big, massive, modern, massively bomber courses. That's what the PGA Championship is for. But I think the two events have to find an identity for themselves. So while I think U.S. Open was fine this year, I think the Erin Hills is a very good golf course and it played well. I'm not sure it's a U.S. Open golf course. I think it's a PGA Championship Ryder Cup course. So in future, I think the U.S. Open should go back to, you know, the old venues, maybe not the same setups as before, but find a balance there. So I think each of the four majors, Carlos, should be unique from each other. And right now, I feel the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship are just too similar.
Totally agree. I couldn't agree with you more on that. Definitely each of them have always had their identity, and here he really got lost in those changes. But with that, we'll wrap up our backspin on the U.S. Open. But there was also action somewhere else. There was action on the LPGA, and I have to mention that Brooks Henderson, she seems that she's developing a habit of staging other sporting events. A little more than a year after she distracted the nation's attention by winning the 2016 Women's PGA Championship at the deciding game of the Stanley Cup Final was about to face off. The 19-year-old from Smith Falls, Ontario, won the Major Classic in Grand Rapids, Michigan, just as the U.S. Open and its leaders were teeing off not far away in Erin, Wisconsin. Her victory also took place on Father's Day with her father, Dave, who's also her coach. He was there in attendance, and her sister, Brittany, in her regular gig as her caddy. She said to Golf Channel immediately after the finish that she was asked by her dad, "Do it for me." And she went out, did it, and that was the best gift that she could give him. She definitely had a dominating week. She fired rounds of 61, 65, 67, 66, and won by two shots over Lexi Thompson and Michelle Wee, who did everything they could to win, but Brooke was just at another level. The key for her was she was steady all day on Sunday. She started the day one shot off the lead. She was steady all day, like I'm saying, on Sunday with three birdies and no bogeys on her card, while Thompson missed a key birdie putt on 17, lipping out from long range. She almost had it. Then moments later, Henderson saved par on 18 just from over 3 feet. That all but clinched the victory. That putt on 18 came after she made an even longer one on 16. That one was key. That was massive. That solidified her two-shot lead and put her in pole position playing in the second-to-last group coming home. From the wider view, her suddenly hot putter also addressed Henderson's issues with the flat stick all year. Some weeks, she had tried as many as a half dozen putters between competition and practice. Her victory couldn't come at a more opportune time, as she had went more than a year since her latest win, which was also her first and to this point lone major title. Overall, Sunday's win is her fourth LPGA title in little more than 2 years, making her regular LPGA starts. But this season had been mostly a disappointment for her. She had just two top 10 results in 14 starts and had not seriously contended in any tournament. While she was standing now as low as 22nd on the LPGA Money Points ledger, her world ranking, once as high as second, had slipped to the mid-teens. But that uneven play comes from the LPGA Tour, where former teenage stars often settle into being merely good rather than great. Yeah, you might have the example there, like Michelle Wee, Paula Kramer, Morgan Pressel, all former teenage stars have all won major titles, but are now all in their 20s without having nearly the success that was first expected of them. She has always been an accommodating, pleasant presence, and she had on more than one occasion, she left the course without speaking to the waiting media since last year's Olympics in Rio. So definitely you had seen that there was something happening to her. There had also been concern about her consolidating her team around her to just her sister and father, since she had stopped working with her previous co-coach, Tristan Mullahy, who was her instructor since playing for Golf Canada's national amateur team. But there is no better tonic than that win on Sunday's victory. And that should, if at all, it should erase any concerns from her. And that victory, as I'm saying, it could not be better time. The LPGA circuit now enters its major season, starting with the Women's PGA Championship next week, where Henderson will defend her title at Olympia Fields near Chicago. That's going to be starting on June 30th. And as I mentioned before, she held off Michelle Wee and Lexi Thompson, who finished T2nd. Michelle continues her upward trend. She had her best finish of the year. She's definitely making a push for the Solheim Cup. And speaking of which, last week we had Madeline Sackstrom as our VIG, who had the greatest season in Symetra Tour history last year, finishing a tie for fourth in a tie with Moria Yutanagan, who also had her best finish of the season. Sackstrom is definitely making a push for the Solheim Cup as well from the European side, and she has been in quite a run. She finished 7th at the Kingsmill Championship. Her final round, 65, on Sunday at the Chubb-Wright Classic, blew her by 40 players that day, and she tied for 4th this week. I would love to see her make that team. She definitely has the credentials to make it. Other notable finishers, Kieran, Lydia Ko, T10, Rookie of the Year, Sung-Hyun Park, T13, Chun-Chun Fong and Haru Nomura, T17, Inbe Park and Se-Yeon Kim, T22, and Stacey Lewis and Christy Kerr were T22. So as you can see, Kieran, this was a loaded field, the one that Henderson beat, and she remains supernova hot. As I will talk a little bit later about something she accomplished yesterday, but for now, she's definitely on the rise.
She certainly is, Carlos, and you're right in saying that we're now entering the real meat of the LPGA season with the three majors coming up within a very short period of themselves, with the PGA Championship, the Women's US Open, and of course the Women's British Open near me up at King's Barnes, and the next sort of 6 weeks on the LPGA Tour are perhaps the most definitive of the season as we head towards the Solheim Cup, of course, and in August. So it's going to be a really exciting few weeks ahead for all the top players, and indeed, and that leaderboard, there are so many great names showing good form, and that bodes well for these big events coming up. And Brooke Henderson, obviously a special talent, getting that win again. Obviously, it's easy when you have success, as she's had in the first couple of years in the tour, but then obviously the past year has been less successful. Doubts creep in your mind, confidence perhaps drops, and that can be hard to overcome. And Lydia Ko, I think, is going through that same situation right now. So for Brooke Henderson to kind of break that run, get a win under her belt again before she defends her title coming up in a few weeks' time at Olympia Fields, that's a great thing for her. And obviously a good leaderboard. Michelle Wee being up there again, great for the LPGA Tour. She's still a big name. Lexi Thompson obviously now a big name as well. So that bodes well having two American players playing well. And Lydia Ko again showing a little bit more form over the top 10. I was looking at Carlos, apparently in the LPGA Tour this year, there's not one player on the circuit so far who has won more than one tournament this year, which is quite a remarkable stat, really. And we'll talk about the PGA Tour and how kind of the great depth of that and how it's hard for a player to break away and dominate, then it's even harder right now on the LPGA Tour. But that said, I think that's due to the fact that the likes of Lydia Ko and NB Park have not been as dominant as they have been in recent years. So that's perhaps the reason for that. That's still quite a remarkable stat that no one has quite picked up another title this year or won a second title. But I think Brooke Henderson certainly, Carlos, a big, she's certainly capable of picking up another title and potentially another major title this summer.
Yeah, like you mentioned, this week the LPGA Tour tied a record setting back in 1991 for going 15 tournaments to start the season without a multiple winner. So it's definitely showing how evenly this, and that's one of the great things I always say about the LPGA. All the top players play week in and week out, and they go out everywhere around the world, and you can expect the best from each one. Any given Saturday, they say, right, but this time it's any given Sunday, anyone can win in the LPGA, and that has been no more true than what it's been this year. So now, moving along to the Web.com Tour, where we had also another tournament, which was the Air Capital, and there Aaron Wise capped off a great week in Wichita with a final round of 268 to win the 28th annual Air Capital Classic, supporting Wichita's youth, the 20-year-old from Capetown, South Africa, who turns 21 tomorrow, finished the week at 21 under 259, 5 shots ahead of Bo Hostler, who earned special temporary membership for the remainder of the season by eclipsing the money earned by number 100 on the previous year's money list. Jim Park, who was playing alongside Wise and Hostler on Sunday, he placed solo third, his best performance on tour since 2015. With this, Wise earned $112,500 for that valiant effort around Crestview Country Club and secured his PGA Tour card for next year. He became the fourth youngest winner in Tour history and the youngest Air Capital Classic champion. Last year, he won the individual title at the NCAA Championship and helped the Oregon Ducks men's golf team to win their first team championship. He turned pro shortly after and qualified for the McKinsey Tour, which is the PGA Tour Canada, where he played 7 events and posted 5 top 10s, including a win. He earned a conditional status on the Web.com Tour for 2017 after finishing the season number 4 on the Order of Merit. So, Kieran, Wise has won on every level and took the next step in his journey to the PGA Tour this week, and he definitely plays the part.
Yeah, kind of a gradual progression for the game for him. And a little bit like Brooks Koepka, actually, you know, winning at the lowest level and then working his way up. And I think there's something to be said for that. You know, obviously, a lot of guys nowadays, they break onto the PGA Tour, like Jordan Spieth did, and he almost immediately from coming out of college, and then they have great success. But I think the guys who perhaps have more a gradual progression through the game, that perhaps stands in greater stead longer term. And you mentioned Bo Hosler there, who, of course, I remember playing as a 17-year-old in the US Open 5 years ago at Olympic Club. Had a great performance there as a teenager, and he's still trying to make his name in the professional ranks. Hasn't quite got there yet, but you know, he was an immense talent when he was a youngster. So we'll see if he gets on in the coming weeks. I'm going to take this over now to the Challenge Tour. They had an event as well in France, and it's actually a home winner this past weekend. Julien Gauthier, who is 31 years old, a former British amateur champion, won that 11 years ago, hasn't quite had much success on the professional circuit in the past few years, but this is his first Challenge Tour win at the age of 31. So he's, you know, potentially the back on the European Tour. He's played in a couple of times in the past, having come through T school, and you know, a great win for him. He played in the Masters, of course, back in 2007, and had that experience. So he's played in the big stage before at some level, hasn't quite been there consistently. But this is a big win for him. And he finished a shot ahead of Ricardo Santos from Portugal, Jack Doherty from Scotland, and Lorenzo Gagliardi from Italy. So a big win for him at home soil, Carlos, and he's potentially going to push on and get back on the European Tour next year. And again, it shows you, you know, obviously we talk about all the younger guys, the guys coming out of college or whatnot, young teenagers, guys 20 years old who are playing on the Web.com or the Challenge Tour, trying to make a career for themselves. Also, in the flip side, you have the older professionals as they're trying to, you know, reinvigorate their career. And Julien, you know, he's only 31, so he's not an old guy by any means, but in this day and age, he is almost an old guy on tour, and to get a win with this is certainly significant for him. And, you know, let's see, hopefully he can push on there and get back on the European Tour full time.
And to round up the weekend backspin, hey, Pro Golf 3 of Keegan Bradley, Brooke Henderson, okay, who had won in Michigan the day before, and Billy Andrade finished at top this year's 19th. Annual CVS Health Charity Classic Golf Tournament yesterday. The team finished with a score of 15 under par, only one stroke ahead of Team Jim Curran, Paula Creamer, and Mark O'Meara. This win is the very first time that host Billy Andrade has won his own tournament. Andrade is a Bristol, Rhode Island native and has been a PGA Tour pro since 1987. The threesome of O'Meara, Creamer, and Curran came to the 18th hole, tied for the lead at 13 under, I'm sorry. With O'Meara's birdie on 18, the groom went into the clubhouse as the leaders, but the threesome of two-time defending champion Keegan Bradley, co-host Billy Andrade, and Brooks Henderson matched the heroics on 18, with Bradley's birdie moved them into a tie, and then Henderson's birdie put the group at minus 15, effectively ending the tournament. So Brooke Henderson definitely won on Sunday. One on Monday, she's definitely on the upward trend. And also on the PGA Latino America, Jared Wolff, he shot a 21 under 267 to capture the BMW Jamaica Classic on Sunday at Cinnamon Hill Golf Club in Montego Bay. The 29-year-old former Murray State golfer caught a pair of 8 under 64s to start the tournament and then held off Gerardo Ruiz and Jose de Jesus Rodriguez by one stroke. On the McKinsey Tour, Robbie Shelton shot 19 under to 65 to win the Golf BC Championship on Sunday at Gallagher's Canyon Golf and Country Club in Kelowna in British Columbia. The former University of Alabama standout made birdie on the final hole to beat Johnny Ruiz, Cody Blakely, and Adam Webb by one stroke. And finally, on the Symetra Tour, Kirpaka Jenkins, she shot 12 under 204, making two late birdies to win the Decatur Forsyth Classic on Sunday at Hickory Point Golf Club in Illinois. she held off debutante Tiffany Chen. Listen to that name. Tiffany Chen from Hong Kong by one shot. And why Tiffany Chen? She posted a bogey-free 9-under-63, which was the lowest round this season on tour, to go from 8 back to the lead early afternoon, but finished second to the 24-year-old from Thailand who quit golf from her last 2 years of high school, but then returned when she needed a scholarship at Grand Canyon University. Karen, I think it's safe to say she did the right thing. This was her first victory on tour. Anything else you would like to add before we move on to the four call?
Not at all. I think, obviously, we've covered everything quite extensively there, Carl. So obviously, now there's a lot of tournaments this week, both in America and Europe. So let's go on talking about them.
Let's talk about them real quick here. The PGA Tour has the Travelers Championship that will be played at the TPC River Highlands in Cornwall, Connecticut. The field is unusually strong this year for the Travelers Championship with Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and Justin Thomas there. Spieth and McIlroy, by the way, is the first time that they're playing the TPC River Highlands. Jim Furyk, you might remember last year, set the PGA Tour record with a 58 in the final round. The last seven tournaments in the PGA Tour have had a cut that was over par. Paddy Harrington is on the field after taking 2 weeks off to recover from an amateur swing at a clinic that split open his elbow. DJ doesn't plan to play again until the British Open, so he's not here. The leading five players from the top 20 in the FedEx Cup after this week are exempt to the British Open if they are not already in the field. Among those on the bubble right now are Mackenzie Hughes, who's number 20, and Wesley Bryan, who's number 22. McIlroy and Day are the only players from the top five in the world who have yet to win this year. So let's see. There hasn't been a single digit under par that has won this tournament since Nick Price did it at 9-under in 1993. So you can expect the low scoring. Also on the Champions Tour is going to be the American Family Insurance Championship. Will be played at the University Ridge Golf Course in Madison, Wisconsin. Steve Stricker is the tournament host, coming off his tie for 16th in the U.S. Open. This will be his first time playing the tournament. He has never won his home state Greater Milwaukee Open, but he has already played 14 times this year, 10 on the PGA Tour. This is going to be his fifth time on the Champions. Nick Faldo is playing the PGA Tour Champions for the first time since the Senior British Open in 2015. The field includes 9 players who won the Greater Milwaukee Open on the PGA Tour. So it'll be nice to see. Kevin Sutherland has his 8 top 10 of the year in Iowa. He's 4th on the money list, but still has not won on the 50 and older tour. And finally, on the web.com tour, still rolling along, the Lincoln Land Charity Championship will be played at Panther Creek Country Club in Springfield, Illinois, for the race to the top 25 in the cards. How about the action in the European Tour?
Yes, Carlos, over in Europe, we have a lot of events here as well, and the BMW International Open is the main highlight of the week, and much like the Travelers in America, a very strong field in Germany this week. Henrik Stenson is defending his championship he won last year, the Open champion, of course. He hasn't really had a great performance last year as well, Trina obviously winning that incredible Open against Phil Mickelson. He hasn't really carried much on since then, so a chance for Henrik to try and show that great quality that he has. This week at a venue, a low-scoring venue, a golf course, which actually hosted this event back in its inaugural year, back in 1989. And also Martin Kaymer is looking to win on home soil. Obviously, he'll be the home favourite in Germany. But he hasn't won an event since the US Open 3 years ago at Pinehurst. Martin Kaymer is always capable when he's on. He's one of the best players in the world, but he doesn't show it often enough. Can he show that quality he has in front of his home fans? That would be a great highlight for them. And of course, Tommy Fleetwood, you mentioned this earlier on, the US Open, played great there, great finish from Aaron Hill. He's playing this week as well. Tommy is the best ball striker on the European Tour, stats-wise, this year. It's a great season so far. I'm really looking forward to the Open at Royal Birkdale, where he's from, in nearby Southport later this summer. And this week here is obviously the start of a big push for the European Tour this summer. Cedric Garcia, the Masters champion, he's also in the field this week. So again, it's a real strong strong field this week in European Tour. And this is really the beginning of a real big period of the season for European Tour, obviously, with the Rolex Series kicking back in for the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, obviously the Open Championship as well. So it's a big streak for golf in Europe coming up. This is the first real step in that schedule. And over on the Challenge Tour, they're over in Denmark, the Maiden Denmark Challenge, which is one last year by Bernd Ritthammer. A number of players who won the Challenge Tour are playing this week, this year. You know, Marcin Wiegel, who won recently, he's playing. Abalo Velasco, who is a former European Tour player, he's also playing this week on the Maiden Denmark. And of course, one name that stands out, Vivian Kepka, but it's not Brooks, it's Chase, his brother. So Chase Kepka is playing in Denmark this week, obviously hoping to carry on the good vibes from his brother Brooks, of course, picked up his first major championship at the weekend there. And over on the Senior Tour, Carlos, they're making their first real event of the year on regular tour, and it's in Finland this week, the first event they've had in Finland, where Jarmo Sandelin, former Ryder Cup player and five-time winner of the European Tour from Sweden, he's making his European Senior Tour debut this week in Finland, obviously. A big character, one of the most kind of colourful players in the European Tour for many years. He's now going to be playing amongst the over-50s. So again, Carlos, a lot of events in America, some great ones in Europe, it's a strong field this week, and I'm sure it's just the same, Carlos, in the LPGA Tour this week as well, ladies Tour.
Yeah, that swing is starting to get hot now with the previews to the Open, so we'll be certainly following them and see what action is going to be. Hey, to close it off, let's talk a little bit about the women. The LPGA is going to hold the 11th edition of the Northwest Arkansas Championship. It's going to be played at the Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers, Arkansas. 41 of the top 50 players from the current LPGA priority list and 17 of the top 25 players from the Rolex rankings will be teeing it up. The players that are skipping this event include Brooke Henderson, Inge Chung, Se-Yeon Kim, Charlie Hall, Lexi Thompson, I.K. Kim, and Christy Kerr. This is the last of 9 tournaments before the LPGA plays its major. Next week is in the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. There's only 1 week between the next major and the U.S. Women's Open, so they are getting into their major season right now. And finally, the Symetra Tour, the Island Resort Championship, will be played at the Sweet Grass Golf Club in Harris, Michigan. There will be a cut to the low 60s and ties following Saturday's second round. This is the 7th edition. The winner of the Island Resort Championship has gone on to earn a tour card 3 of the last 4 years. The only one that didn't do it was Molly Aronson in 2014. The field is incredibly strong this week as 9 of the top 10 on the current money list will tee it up, including the top 7. The only player in the top 10 not scheduled to compete is number 8, Paola Moreno from Cali in Colombia. In fact, 19 of the top 20 on the money list are on the field. That should tell you that the battle for the Volvic race for the card, it's still hot. And so it is for the top spot, where Nana Kortz-Madsen leads Celine Boutier by only $2,000. So we'll see. Sweetgrass Golf Country Club is considered one of the most challenging courses on tour. The lowest winning score is 10-under. That was in 2015. But the winning score has been as high as 1-under in 2014. So there's going to be a great challenge there on the Symetra Tour this weekend. With that, we'll wrap up our 4 call. But before we go on to the Par 5 news, you know, last week, Fred asked the trivia question of the week. And before I started to think about the answer, Kieran Clark, of course, he's the guru. He immediately, boom, Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. What? What? I was starting to think, Kieran. Come on, give me a break. No, he did it. So you got the fastball, knock it out of the park faster than the pitcher send it to you. So let's see this week. I mean, here's the question. 7 players have won LPGA major championships as teenagers. I answered that question when it was said to me, and I said I could only name 5. I started hitting my head. The 7th one, I really missed it very badly. But how many can you name of those 7?
What's the question again, Carlos?
7 players have won the LPGA major championships as teenagers. How many can you name?
Oh, as teenagers, okay. Oof, well, okay. Well, Lydia Ko.
I mean, 4 are obvious, right? 4 are going to be obvious. yeah, Lydia Ko is one, of course. She won the 2015 Heavy Championship, 2016 A&A Inspiration as an 18-year-old. You got one. Go ahead.
I'm kind of blanking right now, actually. It's late at night here, Carlos. Morgan Pressel?
Yes, the 2007 Kraft Navisco Championship when she was 18. That's right.
I see, I picked a harder one there off the top of my head. Brooke Henderson, I have to mention her.
Last year, the KPMG.
You said four were obvious, so that's three I've got so far.
There's a fourth that is obvious, too. That's the only one. Those three are three that were pretty obvious. There's a fourth as well. The other three, I can give you a pass if you can get them.
So I have to get this one right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you a hint. Go back to 2014.
Lexi Thompson.
Yes. She was 19 when she won in 2014 the Kraft Navigator Championship.
Oh, I can relax now.
I mentioned one more of the three that are left, so you should get at least one more. Go ahead.
You think I should get one more? I'm not so sure. Should I get one more? It's hard to keep track of some of the winners who have kind of fallen away at times.
You're gonna hit your head hard.
Carlos, I beat you last week on the question. So this week, you get five. I'm going to stay at four and let you win this week.
Yes, I won. Yes, I
did. That's the kind of guy I am. I'm so generous. So.
First time ever. Finally. Yes. Hey, I'm going to tell you. Yu Kim in 2014, the Evian Championship. Now, this is the two that I didn't get. And both were in 2008. By the way, Hyo Kim had 19 years old when she won the 2014 Evian Championship. But the other two were in 2008. Two big-time players did it that time at 19 years old. The U.S. Women's Open and the LPGA Championship. The U.S. Women's Open was won by the Olympic gold medalist in Bay Park at 19 years old.
It was.
And a former world number one, shortly after that, was Yanni Tseng, who won the 2008 LPGA Championship at 19 years old. So there you have it. Brooke Henderson, Lydia Ko, Morgan Pressel, Lexi Thompson, Yu Kim, Inbee Park, and Yanni Tseng. Those were the ones. So with that, we wrap up definitely our four call, and now we move into the Par 5 news. And Kieran, go ahead, kick it off. You have a lot of European Tour news, so go ahead. You have the tee shot on the Par 5 news.
Yes, Carlos. Obviously, the Ryder Cup's coming to France next year at the Golf National, a great golf course. Of course, the French Open's there every year. Obviously, America won the Ryder Cup last year, so it's going to be even greatly anticipated, more than usual. Obviously, Europe trying to win the Ryder Cup back. But there's, Tony Jacklin, of course, has been a long time a Ryder Cup captain in the 1980s, former two-time major champion. He sort of raised concerns that perhaps the U.S. Ryder Cup team would refuse to travel to next year's competition in France should there be more terror attacks throughout Europe between now and next September. And, of course, that's been kind of a recurring story in the past sort of two or three years within Europe. Obviously, a few terrorist attacks have happened in France and Paris, specifically, obviously, in the past sort of 3-4 months, there have been a few in the UK, in England, and there have been some also in Germany and Belgium. Actually, one in Belgium, I believe, today actually happened, unfortunately. It's been a recurring issue throughout Western Europe in the past couple of years, terrorist incidents of a variety of different kinds. And Jacqueline, who of course won the Ryder Cup, was the first European captain to win the Ryder Cup as a continent, and he sort of raised the point that perhaps they would refuse to come. And obviously, when you talk about spectator safety and spectator safety for fans who are going to be there watching and for the players and the media and so on, it's obviously becomes a real high-risk target for a terrorist. That's a big international event like that, one of the biggest sporting events in the world. But that said, France did successfully host the European Soccer Championship last summer, which is obviously a huge event across the country. That went without any issues at all, and that came in the aftermath of the major attacks that happened in Paris the previous winter. So security services are very good at these things and protecting big major events, and it seems to be almost that they're best at protecting events that are obvious targets. It's the less obvious targets that are perhaps harder to protect. We've seen events recently, of course, in England where an Ariana Grande concert was targeted in Manchester, and events obviously in London Bridge and so on. And that's things that you get, it's very hard to do anything about. Well, an event like the Ryder Cup is obviously contained. It's easier to protect that way. So while it may be a target for some people, it would be very difficult for them to actually do anything about it. So I think it's an interesting point that Jacqueline raises about Americans not making the journey over. I don't think at the moment that's a real issue. Obviously, you know, depends what could happen within the next year. You never know. But I think right now, you know, in the end, you know, terrorism is not a new thing. It's in Europe. It's been around for many, many years, decades. You know, we had Irish Republican terrorism throughout the UK in the 70s and 80s. There was terrorism in Spain from the Basque separatists for many years. It's not, and there's also kind of incidents in France back in the day from protesters and so on. So it's not a new thing. Security is obviously a big issue for any sporting event, and certainly in the case of the Ryder Cup, obviously it's a big target. But I think in the end, you know, Jacqueline raises a point, but I think right now it's one that, you know, there isn't really an issue there at the moment. But obviously, if an individual player felt uncomfortable, then that could change things. But I think really the players themselves are used to traveling around the world. They travel to some pretty interesting locations at times, and you know, they're pretty well schooled that way. So I think it's not an issue right now, but obviously if something was to happen, you know, majorly for the next year, then obviously perhaps some questions would be raised. And you remember, Carlos, back in 2001, when the 2001 Ryder Cup was actually postponed for a year. It was due to the play of the Belfry that year, and it was postponed for a year. And in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks that came a couple of weeks later, and they made the decision to actually postpone that Ryder Cup for a year. So it's not unprecedented for terrorism to actually affect the Ryder Cup. But I think at the moment, next year's Ryder Cup should go nice and smoothly. It's a great venue, a great golf course, and hopefully the players put on a great show, because also the Ryder Cup is a great showcase for the game. On a fantastic golf course like that. Hopefully, Carlos, it will be a successful event next year. But obviously, you know, in this day and age where these incidents seem to be happening more frequently, it's on the news all the time, then it's understandable, I guess, for concerns to be there. So we seem to have lost Carlos and the recording, so
no, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're here.
I'm here. Yes, I'm sorry. I started talking, and I forgot the mute button was on. What's going on? So I was saying, I agree with you. I think it'll go unless something major, and I'm not trying to diminish what has happened so far. I mean, it's totally terrible, but I still think that it would take something bigger than what has already happened for the Ryder Cup not to go to France and be played. I mean, I assure you, just like I was saying about the Olympics, that everybody was like, oh man, everybody's going to be assaulted and there's going to be terror there. You know, I know the authorities is going to take care of making sure the whole zone and the transportation and everything for those players and their families and the spectators is going to be safe. I know that it has to be something really major for it not to go. So I totally expect to be there at the Ryder Cup at the golf club there in France next year. Hey, let's move on a little bit now and talk about Augusta National. They have only accepted women as members in 2012, and one recent report found that the face of the sport, overwhelmingly white, hasn't changed in decades. To broaden golf's appeal, the PGA of America is trying to strengthen the women's game, get more children and adults to play, and hold more big tournaments at public courses, not just at exclusive country clubs. PGA CEO Peter Bevacqua, he told CNN Money that they know that this game needs more diversity. It needs to be more accessible. They have to put their flag in the ground and say, hey, we're serious about this.
the PGA didn't have a tournament for women until 2015 when they took over the LPGA Championship and renamed it to the Women's PGA Championship. The LPGA, like the U.S. Golf Association and even the PGA Tour, is separate from the PGA of America. The PGA's main job is to grow the game in the United States and support golf pros at the clubs. That event includes a networking program that encourages women to use the game to advance their careers. Women can get lessons in leadership from women like former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Bevacqua, who took the job in 2012, he's saying that he's most proud of that tournament. He said the magnitude of the change struck him when he walked into the headquarters after the first championship. He also said that golf will one day be like tennis and have men and women playing the same tournaments at the same time. That's a little bit of a stretch, but we'll see. To bring new players in, the PGA is trying to publicize the game more, which is a break from their usual approach. He acknowledged, and this is right, I mean, they used to sit back and wait for prospective golfers to go find them, but then he admitted they cannot just do that. They have to go out, be more aggressive, go out and find people, not wait for them. One obvious way, he says, and this is his opinion, is to attract young fans. That is easier than done. Under Bevacqua, right now the PGA is going to the communities and school to expose more kids to the game. It helped develop Drive Chip and Putt, a free national tournament for junior golfers. When the program launched back in 2014, there were 110 local events in 19 states. Now there are 268 all across the country. The PGA is also relying on the roughly 29,000 golf pros it represents to attract another key demographic, adult golfers. The PGA offers a program called Get Golf Ready, under which players can get 5 lessons from a golf pro for just $99. He's hoping that his work to get golf into the 2016 Rio Olympics will help attract new players. To make the sport more inclusive, he's committed to hosting more tournaments at public courses. Under Bevacqua, the 2019 PGA Championship was awarded to Bethpage Black, which is, of course, a public course in New York, and the 2020 PGA Championship will be played at the public TPC Harding Park, which is a public course there in San Francisco. To change and grow the game, he says, golf needs to focus on what it makes it unique, for which he said that if you're waiting at home watching the PGA Championship, later that day or the next day, you can go out there and play the exact same golf course. I truly think, Kieran, this is something far bigger than that. I will always say, you know, they always keep saying it's about attracting the young guys and going after this or that demographic and forget about other age groups. If you're really to grow the game, all the different governing bodies have to sit down with a truly open mind and listen to every age group, every demographic, reach a consensus of what will make it appealing to everyone. Of course, you can't please everyone, but you can make it enjoyable for everyone, not just try to adjust it to one or this other demographic. To me, it's just to focus on one group. If you do that, the other will flee. I mean, you will have the bottoms-out effect everywhere where you will have a lead. You're filling it up on top, but it's going to be going out down the drain.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right, Carlos. I think a more kind of a wider ranging kind of philosophy is required from all governing bodies trying to attract different age groups to it. Obviously, different age groups have different needs and are in different positions in their life. It's one thing trying to attract someone in their teens, but how do you keep them in golf in their 20s and 30s when they're older and having jobs and having families and stuff like that? So there are different challenges for the game, and it's something that the game hasn't quite got its handle on properly, but I think it's actually a very difficult thing. We'll kind of give them a concession on that. I think it's quite a challenge for them, particularly in this day and age where everything seems to be more, there's more competition, I guess, for activities than ever before, and that can be a challenge that way. But in terms of growing the game, there's certainly been a lot of growth to the Open Championship qualifying this year. Carl, so obviously the Open Championship is coming up at Royal Birkdale in a month from now, and the qualifying is being played in a couple of weeks. And there are going to be 3 additional places available this year for golfers competing in final qualifying on the Tuesday, the 4th of July. They play 36 holes, and that's the top finishers and five different venues that they qualify for the Open at Birkdale. And there's only 360 players in the total field in all these events, including some kind of familiar names. Ian Poulter, who finished runner-up 9 years ago to Park Harrington at Birkdale, he's going to be in the field. Vijay Singh, the three-time major champion, he's going to be there too. And there's Retief Goosen, these older guys trying to get into the Open, and that's good to see. And they'll be up against a lot of younger guys, a lot of young pros, emerging young amateur players trying to make their way into the Open Championship who have come through regional qualifying, which will be played later this week, next Monday, I should say. And there's five venues this year, Carlos, for the Open qualifying. There'll be Notts and the Hollingwell Course in Nottinghamshire, Gales Links in Scotland, Hillside, Royal St. Ports in Woburn. They're the five venues, and from those five venues, 12 players will make their way into the field for the Open Championship in July at Royal Birkdale, Carlos. So obviously, it's the Open Championship, but still, obviously, there's a lot of exemptions there. The top players in the world get in automatically, of course, but there's still that space, that place for players to make it through from the grassroots all the way up to playing from potentially a club pro or an amateur player, making it all the way to play in the Open Championship. Obviously, it's harder than ever before now. The fields are stronger, but there's three more places there, Carlos. There's more opportunities now for a lesser name to have to grasp the opportunity of playing in the game's oldest major championship.
Definitely. Those were needed. I mean, you can see due to the record number of entries, that was needed, more qualifying sites. And that should tell you also how popular the Open is. Everybody wants to play it. I mean, to me, after the Masters, that's my second favorite major, and I can't wait for it to be there now in July. So, I won't be there, but I'll be watching it for sure. It was a big deal for Bob Ford to get the Bob Jones Award, the USGA's highest honor. It got even better when he was asked to be the honorary starter at the U.S. Open. I'm laughing, but you'll see why. For as long as he wants the job. He retired last year as the head professional at Oakmont, which has hosted the U.S. Open a record 9 times. He still works the winter months as the head pro there at Seminole in South Florida. Ford said Wednesday, "Very cool. It's an incredible privilege and honor that I've been asked to do that. And as President Murphy said last night, I can do it as long as I want to. And that's very cool. It will bring a little stability and continuity to the position." End of quote. Ford said he went through his own version of a practice round. He was especially making sure he pronounces the names correctly. I mean, I can imagine him trying to say it, but let me tell you something, Kieran. He got tested immediately. The first player off the tee on number one Thursday was Jordan Niebrugge. So he had to test that, Jordan Niebrugge. I don't know if you heard him, but he said it like that, Jordan Niebrugge. So, he did it well. So he'll be, until he wants the job, he'll be the honorary starter there at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, it's I also remember Ivor Robson, who was the starter of the Open Championship for 40 years, and he would always, some of the names he had to read out were quite remarkable. Some of the players from Japan or Asia or parts of Spain or whatever, there's some really complicated names trying to read out, and it was certainly hard, and there's some very imaginative pronunciations. But again, it's Ivor Robson, so whatever he said, it was right. So it didn't matter. If he said the name wrong, well, he was right. He had that one way of saying certain words, and it was never Tiger Woods. It was always Tiger Woods. That's the way he spoke. It was very good. So he was a great part of
the here in the show,
years.
You know that. Yeah, here in the show, you know that Fred always let me do those hard pronunciations. He takes the easy ones, but I have to be doing that practice.
I would like to do the same. And when I see a difficult name, I give the guy a nickname or call him by his first name or something like that. I see a complicated second name, I think.
Whatever is easy, the first name or the last name, right? Whichever is easier.
whichever is easier, exactly. I'll go with that because some of the names are quite, and obviously golf being the international game that it is, you see some really imaginative names. And also, when you're writing about golf, I do sometimes, it's hard to even spell some of these names. It took me about a year to try and spell Louis Oosthuizen's name correctly, but now I'm perfect at it. I can spell that word right now. I'm a master at it. did it so often that it was hard for a while. But that's golf for you. But yeah, one person who has a much easier name to pronounce, Carlos, is Leona Maguire from Ireland, who, of course, is the world's top-ranked amateur. And she's a two-time Annika Award winner. We spoke about that last week when I was on the show. And you know, a great, tremendously academic, gifted young woman as well in college. And she's added to our list of titles the Women's Amateur Championship, British Amateur Championship in Wales. She won that 3-2 in the final over a Spanish player whose name I'm not going to try and pronounce. I do apologize to her. And but yeah, Leona, obviously, she's an immense talent, someone to really look out for. She has a place in both the US Women's Open coming up and the Women's British Open coming up, so it's an opportunity to see her trying to compete with the top pros. It'll be interesting to see. She won the Low Amateur Award at the Women's British last year. And she's also qualified for the Evian Championship via the Annika Award. So we'll see Leona playing the three of the majors coming up, not the PGA Championship, but the three beyond that one. So, you know, Carl, she's obviously world number one amateur, a tremendous talent, a very intelligent person as well. So she is someone to look out for in the next few years.
One question I have for you. I mean, she hasn't been playing there. She's from Ireland. And Leona definitely shows she has what it takes, to me, in my opinion, to be a very good player, possibly in the LPGA. What's your thought about Leona? Because she really has all the tools to become a very good player. And she passed on becoming a pro to finish there at Duke. So what are your thoughts on Leona Maguire?
Well, from the Irish golf journalists I've read or what I've seen, you know, they all speak very highly of her. You know, they think she's an amazing talent. You know, she's a brilliant golfer. Like you say, that has all the tools to really succeed at the top level. But of course, with anything, you know, making the transition from amateur to professional is not always an easy one. Some players do it brilliantly. Other ones find it hard work. You know, golf is no longer just a game. It becomes their job, and it's a different sort of dynamic. So, but certainly in terms of her ability, she has, you know, a great platform to potentially become a top player. And it'd be great for Irish golf to see her. Obviously, in more recent years, we've seen obviously the likes of Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry and Graham McDowell. Your Polly Kynes has been male golfers from Ireland who have won majors and been successful. But how great would it be to have a female player from Ireland, you know, getting onto the LPGA Tour and potentially winning majors and winning titles? You know, that'd be massive. That'd be great. And you know, we wish her well because she's a great talent. You know, she's stuck in the college, did well there academically. So a very well-rounded character and a very good golfer. So it's a I'm intrigued to see how she performs when she eventually turns pro.
She definitely will. And with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news, and now we'll move into the practice range for every week. Each of us, Fred and I, pick a topic this week, and each of us take our own shots at it. That's why we call it the practice range. This week, we had two, which we're going to talk about one of them really quick because, of course, the Open is going to be pretty soon, and we're going to have, anyway, our previews, our massive wall-to-wall preview. But just in the wake of the U.S. Open being finished, now we have to switch to where the Open is going to be played, which is going to be next year. So with it in the book, we would like to say, how does the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale stack up against the U.S. Open? I know that DJ, Hideki, Jordan, Ricky, Jason, Justin, Rose, Tommy Fleetwood, Brooks Koepka now, of course, Ricky Fowler, Sergio Garcia, also Henrik Stenson and Alex Noren, who haven't been mentioned a lot. But those are the top 10 players. And if you add to that number 11, John Rahm now, hey, how do you see, very quickly, how do you see all this paying off at the Royal Birkdale? I mean, isn't the course perfect for the renewed game of Sergio as well?
Well, you know, Carlos, every golf course is perfect for Sergio. We all know that, of course. You know, even Augusta National,
yeah, of course.
For so many years. He eventually won the Masters there, so he can do anything. Now, Sergio has a great love for the Open Championship. He consistently plays well in the Open. He enjoys it. He enjoys the atmosphere. he enjoys Lynx golf, and he will certainly be a contender at Birkdale. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't up there at some point over the weekend. But again, for the guys at Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, and Ray McIlroy, have had a disappointing US Open. I've had a couple of injury problems, kind of uncertainty over the summer for them in different ways. It's a big championship for them to kind of bounce back at Birkdale, which is probably one of the better Open venues. A lot of people think it's the best Open venue in England. It's a great golf course. It's a testing course in certain conditions. Also, saw it in Harrington one 9 years ago. So it's a proper golf course. It's a great test, and it tends to reward very good players. You know, the champions at Birkdale tend to be exceptional players, and I'd be surprised if it wasn't the case this time. But looking at Tommy Fleetwood particularly, who's from the area, he used to sneak on Royal Birkdale, you know, against the rules, but he did it anyway, and he used to play there quite a bit. He's from the local area, have a big support behind him. He's now got a taste of contending in a major at Erin Hills, of course. He's having a new year of his life. He's a great ball striker, he knows the golf course well. So that support, home support behind him, Tommy could be the name to watch out for. But the Open, obviously, Carl, is obviously a great highlight of the summer. You know, it's a unique major played out with America. Lynx golf, it's a different challenge altogether. And it's always fascinating to see how these guys fare in that test, particularly if the wind gets up and the conditions are a little bit tricky. It's always fun to see who can come through that challenge. And it could be Sergio.
Well, if you might remember, at the beginning of the year, I said Sergio's going to win the Open. Yeah, so I'm gonna keep this for the Open preview, but I'll give some 7 or 8 reasons why he's going to win it by then. But definitely, I think that after we saw the U.S. Open, we still want some more major championships, so can't wait really for the Open. Rory Birkdale is a great, great site for the Open. And of course, like you had mentioned before, the beauty about the majors is that each one of them have their own identity. And even though the U.S. Open has changed this year, maybe the last one, the Open will always remain the same thing. It's Lynx golf courses. Is going to be a very tough challenge, and the wind, there might be rain, you know, it's going to be quite a spectacle, and players better become ready for that, and I can't wait for it. So with that, let's move on to the second one, which is really the one that I want to talk about, and this is the PGA Tour is going to start to make drug testing more stringent with blood tests, finally. Starting in 2018, I mean, the PGA Tour is improving now its anti-doping policy by adding blood testing next season. That's starting in October, which is when they start that silly wraparound thing. But the change is just one of two major changes to their policies heading into the 2018, with the other being additions to the banned substances list, which will now match the level of the World Anti-Doping Association. I think you all know where this is coming from and why. But according to the Associated Press, this will allow the tour to test for human growth hormones, which is a controversial substance that cannot be found in urine. In addition to all of these technical changes, the tour will also announce suspensions for all substances next season, as opposed to the current system when only the performance-enhanced drug suspensions are announced. The tour's policy has been controversially thin in the past, particularly amid scandals in other sports like cycling and baseball. The problem when the tour went out to disprove the conception that athletes dope was that they didn't want to know if they're athletes dopes. Really, I mean, the tour implemented an extremely flawed system which could be easily circumvented by players. And it's been for years said that it's been that way. HGH, which is the most well-known for its alleged ties to NFL players recovering from injuries, couldn't be detected at all in the former policy. Now, this new policy brings the tour to WADA standards, and it's also a warning shot to players. The policy will have a soft open in October of next year for the AP, with much of the testing still coming through urine testing, and only some of it coming through blood. Blood testing will likely become the norm shortly after. So, Kieran, what's your take on this? I mean, for this, I'm seeing Vijay Singh, I'm seeing DJ, I'm seeing a lot of things that are leading to all this that is happening right now. But mostly, I think, because of Vijay Singh's case, the PGA Tour finally is changing this.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point under Vijay Singh, and obviously that ongoing case has been running for a couple of years now, and Vijay's really pushing that through and causing all sorts of boil-up with the PGA Tour. But I think in the end, we have to welcome this. You know, if golf wants to be taken seriously as an athletic sport, then it has to adhere to the same principles as other individual sports do as well. And I think having more transparency was not always something that Tim Fincham at the PGA Tour liked before, so I hope my head successor, Jay Monahan, is now changing that, which I think is a welcome thing. You know, having more less secrets there on the players, obviously they remember the stories of certain players who are not named, going on extended leave of absences throughout the years, and that will no longer be the case, and they have more transparency about that. And that's good for them. It's good for the game. It's we have to having secrecy creates suspicion. It creates suspicion that golf isn't clean. If you aren't testing properly, if you aren't being transparent when tests are positive, then it creates an air of suspicion. And certain years, you've all seen kind of rumors about golf and certain things. It's kind of something that said years ago that so many players in the tour would be taking beta blockers, which are designed to lower your heart rate, because it helps them over pressure and nerves in the first tier over a putt. Remember Gary Player, I think 10 years ago now, at Carnoustie before the Open Championship, saying that he thought there were so many players in the tour who were actually taking performance-enhancing drugs, and he thought it was like a certainty, and he's probably right. It's so easy to get through. We've seen all the issues in tennis and obviously cycling, and the banned list of substances is obviously very stringent, and for golf to follow that more closely, the players will have to educate themselves more. And that's now on them. They have to take their responsibility of sportsmen seriously. And all the golfers now, they're all into their fitness, they're all fitness athletes, because now they're Olympians, many of them. And for golf to be taken at that level as an Olympic sport, of course, now in the longer term, as we found out recently, and for that to really happen, to have a stronger set of policies, a stronger testing system, more transparency, I can't see anything wrong with that. We can argue about why they came to this decision, whether the DJ Singh thing or the legality around that, but I think it's more for us as a game of golf overall to have a game guaranteed to be cleaner, more transparent. As a golf fan, as someone who follows the game closely, who wants to think the best of the people that are playing the game, who wants to see a true sport that's honest, then golf's supposed to be the game about integrity, and these changes, I think, will ensure that golf remains a game about integrity.
Definitely. I think this has been a long time coming, and they finally, to me, it's surprising that they did it, but I think this is part, definitely, we have been reporting about the Vijay Singh case, and since they have been, like, on the losing end on that part, it seems like they were going to be opening up a can of worms as that case was going to be turning towards Vijay Singh's side, so they would have to start opening up a little bit more. So they're taking this, I think, as precautionary measure, say, let's just settle it, let's start opening up, and let's be, because Vijay Singh's case was that it wasn't up to par with the WADA at the same level of testing. If it would have been that way, that wouldn't have happened, what happened to him. But now, it's going to be even, it's going to be the way it's supposed to be. And like you say, we are going to finally be able to say we have a cleaner sport. Of course, there might be these people that will say, well, there's always a way to circumvent it. But for the most part, it's the same way that it's being tested all over the place. And I think at least that part of the controversy about who's using performance-enhancing drugs, especially the HGH, I think that will be going away, and it's a good thing. Okay, so now, yes. Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I agree with that, Carlson. Again, I think it's It was a surprising move from the PGA Tour. I think we've been so used to the PGA Tour down the years of being very secretive and not being the most transparent. So for them to actually make a change like this is quite a big statement for them. Whether, you know, it's due to the VJ Singh case or whatever else, I think we have to kind of say that I think for golf overall, it's a positive move.
Totally agree. Let's do our final putts. Now, before we close the show, I have two here. One was recently today released, so it wasn't on my initial. But the first one was about Tiger Woods. We keep talking about his case. The arraignment for him on the DUI charge has been delayed now until August. Court documents that were filed Thursday show that the presiding judge canceled the original July 5th hearing and reset it for August 9, but no details were provided. He could qualify for a diversion program in which the DUI charge is downgraded to reckless driving, which results in probation, a fine, and other conditions such as taking a DUI course. I think that's the way that he's going to go. I'm not sure, but I think that's the way they're going to go with this. He did tweet last night, and this is something that is key to that. And I quote, "I'm currently receiving professional help to manage my medications and the ways that I deal with back pain and the sleep disorder. I want to thank everyone for the amazing outpouring of support and understanding, especially fans and the players on tour." End of quote. I think this is like a setup for him, like a taking a step. Two things. Great that he's doing it because he really needs it. And we really want him to get better. And I'm not on the other side that is condemning him and trying to grill him, because this is really a human being we're talking about. If he has some problems, let's help him. I mean, he was the hero of golf for a lot of years. That was the face of golf, the person that you fans that are now going against him, you followed him and were behind him all the way. So let's try to be a little more understanding with him. And Kieran, Woods' attorneys did not immediately respond to an email seeking comment, so we'll see what comes out of all this soon. But I certainly hope that he really gets his act going. And with that he's taking as a precautionary measure, I think that his DUI charge will be downgraded, he will get probation, and he'll take some DUI courses, and we'll see. The last one that I have is one of the longest running relationships between a player and a caddy is over. You know that players and caddies not usually go along well for a long time, but Phil Mickelson and caddy Jim Bones McKay each released a pair of statements today explaining that the two have mutually decided to go their separate ways, ending a run that began with a U.S. Open sectional qualifier back in 1992. You know, they became one of the most recognized duos in golf, combining for 41 PGA Tour wins, including 5 majors. So, Kieran, Bones and Phil Mickelson are no longer a duo.
It's the end of an era, Carlos, and it's a sad thing. You know, as you say, they've been one of the great double acts in golf, the great player-caddy relationship, and it just shows you, Carlos, that even the best things just can't last forever. So it'll be really interesting to see where Jim McKay goes to next. Obviously, a caddy is such great experience there. You know, there are a few guys in the tour who might fancy having him as their caddy. And we'll wait and see where he goes. That's something quite fascinating to see. Well, it's the end of an era. Made it sound that Phil's career sort of winding down a little bit, and Jim wants to go away and find a younger guy to try and get some money out of, because, you know, Carlos, being a caddy on the tour can be very lucrative, as one particular caddy, who's in my final putt, and I listened to him there very well, actually, a good transition for me there. And my final putt here is that JT Fitzgerald, of course, carries for Rory McIlroy. And last year, you know, remember, Rory won the FedEx Cup, got a $10 million bonus and all the rest of it, you know, that's fantastic for him, but fantastic for JT as well. So apparently, according to Forbes magazine, earned an estimated $1.6 $5 million last year for being a caddy.
Whoa.
A caddy. Carrying the bag. He's carrying
the
bag.
Profession.
I love the caddies, but he's carrying the bag. And he earns $1.6 million in a year. You know, Carlos, we're in the wrong job here. We need to get on tour and get a bag. It's me to do. That's where you make money. So, you know, JT is fantastic. But obviously, you know, it shows you the money that, you know, the players win big money, and even, you know, Brooks Koepka, you know, winning the US Open there, $2 million, a 10% cut from that, which is kind of standard rate, that's $200,000 to his caddy. So it's when you caddy for a top player, it can be extremely lucrative, that's for sure, and you can become a millionaire. I remember Steve Williams, of course, caddied for Tiger all those years. Steve Williams was, I believe, the highest earning sports person, if you can call him that, in New Zealand. He was a caddy. So there you are, it shows you. But I know Fred loves the caddies, and I don't mind them either, but for a guy who's carrying a bag and reading a yardage book, it's not a bad return, I've got to say. And, and elsewhere, my other final putt for the day is actually Wentworth, the famous club, of course, the PGA BMW Championship is held every year in the European Tour. They've had Chinese owners for the last 3 years, and they've completely changed the club altogether, and they've reduced the number of members from 4,000 to 800. And those invited to remain were charged a one-off payment of £100,000 to remain a member. And they're now going to ban any member who criticises the club on social media, the internet, or to a newspaper or magazine. So, this Wentworth is becoming like the Soviet Union right now. They're very oppressive to the members. So, I don't know about you. JP Fitzgerald could probably afford now a membership at Wentworth. I'm not sure I'd be taking that up there because it doesn't sound very welcoming to me, Carlos.
Nah, I think Fred can afford it. You and I cannot even with 2 or 3 years' pay. So. No, most definitely we can. Fred, I'm sure he will. He could. But anyway, being a caddy, Fred, sorry we're not downgrading them or denigrating them. We repent if we're insulting you by what we're saying about the caddy. It's just ridiculous, all the money they make. But anyway, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to you, Kieran. Always great to have you on the show. We always have a great time talking to you and your special insight. And finally, I was able to get a trivia better than you. I mean, it might be 10 more years before I get another one, but at least I can brag I got one. So don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, if you have Roku TV, you can see us there. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres alongside with Kieran Clark. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Bye.
The Beauty Brands annual leader sale is here. Save up to 74% on fabulous salon brands like Biolage, Redken, Hemp's, and Paul Mitchell. Over 180 of your favorite shampoos and conditioners starting at just $13.99 each. Visit beautybrands.com. Good news, great news, amazing news! The Beauty Brands annual leader sale is here! Protect that gorgeous do of yours with professional salon products. Save up to 74% on over 180 top brands like Biolage, Redken, Hemp, Paul Mitchell, and more. Pamper your mane and pamper it good. I'm excited, you're excited, we're all excited. It's leader sale!
Beauty Brands annual leader sale. All your favorite salon professional shampoos and conditioners starting at just $13.99. Get to your nearest store or visit beautybrands.com.